This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today I have a treat. I have my father-in-law, Larry Erickson, here to talk to us about many things that are going on in his life, all the way from when he was younger to what he's doing nowadays. And Larry, I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast and coming all the way from Austin, Minnesota, just to be here.
Thank you, Chris. It's a privilege.
You're welcome. And what was the request that you had for a beer? What was, you said something you wanted.
I wanted something that made me feel good, that made me look good, taste good.
Well, the scarf's already got you looking good, so.
Thank you.
I got you, well, I got us. I've never had this. It's Patagonia Provisions and Deschutes Brewery. And it's a Kernza lager. So on here it says it's bright, crispy, and wildly drinkable. But also it says that they're in the business to save our home planet.
Oh, nice.
So that makes you look good, makes me look good, and makes them look good.
Well, I'm happy.
Yeah. So anyways, I want to thank you for coming all the way down here on a Tuesday night. And it's bitterly cold out. And so are these beers. Let's crack these bad boys. Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's see what we got here. The climate could use beer, it says. It says the climate could use a beer.
Where are these made, you know?
Oh, that's a great question. It's organic, but I don't know where Deschutes.
They should get a little credit.
They do. I always tag them in the comments. Let's see where it's from. I know it's on here somewhere. It's Oregon. Oh, Bend, okay. Oregon. So, sure. Yeah, that's what we're having today. And I got one of my handy-dandy little koozies. And I got one for you, too, if you want one, or take one home with you, whatever you want.
Thank you. Well, maybe should.
Maybe should promote the podcast.
That's right.
Until they start sponsoring. Then we'll have them up front and center.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you're down here, and you have many, many different things that you have going on in your life, many hobbies going on nowadays. But I want to start from the beginning because you actually went to college here in Winona back a time ago.
That's
if you
right.
want to give away your age, you're more than welcome to.
Well, I spent 4 years here from 68 to 72 going to Winona State College. It was called Winona State College at the time.
Okay. And then what'd you go for?
I went to become a teacher, and my major was history and my minor was sociology.
And did you ever use that degree?
No. And the reason...
I love that.
The reason was the class that graduated before me. This we're talking, I was in my fourth year of college, and the class that graduated before me, not one person was placed in teaching because there was such a glut of teachers at that time because of the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That was going on. So people, would they get into teaching so they didn't have to go to the war? Or... Well, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. If you went to college, you were exempt. Or if you were, like, you know, needed on the farm, you were exempt. If you weren't doing anything, yeah, you got drafted. And
okay.
Also, the draft came out during the time I was in college.
Sure. Now, did you, like, my dad always said he was watched, people were watching for their numbers. Were you watching for your numbers as well, like he was?
Oh, yes, with bated breath. And I was fortunate. My number was 295, and they never got to me.
Oh, so you're way down the list.
Yep.
That's good, because I always hear people came back and they maybe weren't the same, or some sort of problem happened. Like, I always hear about this thing called Agent Orange. I don't know what that ever was, but my dad said some of his friends came back and they just kind of weren't the same afterwards. So,
well, yeah,
you're kind of, you got lucky on that then.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I mean, the Agent Orange, and then the people, there was a guy that graduated a year or two ahead of me. He ended up crawling through tunnels looking for people in Vietnam and stuff. Can you imagine working underground?
Jeez.
No.
No, and then I, you know, I remember, like, it, the war didn't get very much respect from the citizens either, and even the soldiers I don't think did as well, because, well, they were forced to go, first of all, so you can't be mad at the soldiers, you're going to be mad at the government. So I just know that they didn't really get any respect, and citizens were pretty mad back in the day about that.
Well, right, you had your students in various colleges protesting, mm-hmm. National Guard came out, and it was on the cover of Life magazine where the one fellow got shot by the National Guard.
Jeez.
For protesting.
Well, I got to say, you lucked out, and obviously you were in college as well. And then you never used your teaching degree.
No.
So what did you do after school then?
Well, since no one was getting placed, I decided I better start making some money and get to earn a paycheck. So I got a job at IBM. I was there about 6 months. We were disassembling machines that came back and saving parts.
Okay. And IBM back then, we're talking the early 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't making personal computers like we're thinking about nowadays. What were they making then?
The computers and stuff that they had were as big as your family's living room to do what your phone does now in the palm of your hand. It was a whole different world. But IBM was such a wonderful thing for the state of Minnesota and for the local economy. So many businesses were spawned to feed and help IBM, you know, locally. And so many farmers farmed and worked at IBM. It was just a godsend for Minnesota.
So how long were you there then for?
I was only there 6 months because I preferred to be outside. I was raised on a farm and I just didn't like sitting inside.
Sure, sure. So then did you end up farming afterwards then?
I actually took a job as a beef herdsman. I worked off horseback, tending cattle, feeding, and getting the bread and so forth. I worked for a gentleman who had an exotic herd.
What's considered an exotic herd?
Well, if you can imagine, a breed of cattle called Limousine.
Limousine
was the new breed at the time, and they were very meaty, and their daily rate of gain was wonderful, so they were working with them, but it was a challenge.
Sure.
They were pretty spunky.
Were you good at riding horseback? Because to me, you know, people on movies, they make it look just easy as can be, but I've ridden a horse before while it was walking, and it's a lot of core work. It's not like you're just... Oh, yep. It's like riding a bicycle or a car. It's a lot of got to be twisting, turning, and making sure you stay upright, obviously.
Well, that's a part of it, yeah. But if you're trying to do something at the same time, like catch this cow and make it turn around and go back the other way, and you're going down an embankment with brush and everything all around, it can be quite challenging and a little dangerous. I had to back down a couple times. There was a bull out in the pond. And I wanted to get him out of there, but I ended up being the one getting out of there.
Did you ever fall off?
Oh, all the time.
All the time, okay.
Yes, you know, they'll buck when you're least expecting it for some unknown reason. They see their shadow or whatever, you know, okay. And whoa.
Okay, so then, now, I obviously, I've been with Stephanie for 11 years now, and I know you have a business which is called Oscon, which is not farming, as far as I know. So you got out of farming and cattle herding and all that, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so then what did you ultimately get into then? What is Oscon, I guess, and what does it stand for?
Well, Oscon is short for Austin Connection,
okay.
And I had a friend who worked at IBM. His name was Jack Dunlop. And he said, why don't you call it Oscon? It doesn't have to mean anything, but it starts with an A. So if anyone's looking for your services, who are they going to see first?
That's right. It's just like I always see in the phone book, ABC Autos or ABC Cars, because it comes up first. So OSCON comes up first in the phone book when someone's looking for the business that you're doing. Now, I am kind of, I don't know exactly what Austin Communications does. Like, what did you do or what do you do? Because you've since retired, kind of,
right,
in a sense, at least. What were you making or producing, or what was it?
We had every sort of customer you can think of, because most products have electricity in them of some sort. Either it's a wire harness that you plug into the wall, or it's a circuit board of some sorts, and the circuit board is designed to do something. So it takes specialized equipment and special talent to make these things, kind of a dedicated workforce. So other companies hire this done rather than to do it themselves. And that's what we would do. We had a tremendous variety of customers.
Okay, can you give me a customer that you've had then? Like, is there a brand that we would all know? Or
let's see. For instance, there's a one called ILC up in Bloomington, and they do lighting.
Okay.
So the major stadiums throughout the United States that are being remodeled and redone right now, their products are going into them, and it's kind of cool, or you feel kind of proud to know that all these stadiums are containing product that you made.
You know? Holy cow, that's nuts. Now, when I think of what you're doing, I think of little circuit boards that you said, very small pieces. So are you literally the person sitting there putting all these pieces together, or do you have employees, or how does it all work? Because I feel like you have to be very precise with all these circuit boards.
We used to have people doing these things by hand when we were doing small volumes.
Okay.
And as we grew, then we purchased equipment to do the things that people are doing by hand, because then it gets, the orientation is correct and the location is correct, and you avoid a lot of mistakes by programming the machine to do it. And now our machine can put down 50,000 parts an hour, you know, compared to what could a person put down one at a time. So we've grown considerably.
Okay. Now, did you start this by yourself, or was there multiple people that were involved with OSCON, or how did it all come to be? Because clearly this has nothing to do with teaching at all. No. It doesn't seem like it, at least.
No, this goes back to when I worked at Leroy Products from 1985 to 1990. Leroy Products did a lot of electronic assembly too. And the owner encouraged me to take some of these small jobs that were too small for Leroy Products and do them yourself, he said, you know. Provide jobs for people you know or people in the area, because that was Don Bothan's priority in life, was providing jobs for his community there in Leroy. And so he allowed me to take these small contracts and process them at home and have other people help me in their homes to get that job done too.
So you were working for someone and then also had basically a side business going on at the same time.
Exactly, yes.
So how many employees did you have then starting off?
Well, to start with, it was me and a couple neighbor kids that would come over after school. A
couple neighbor kids.
And then it turned out to be, you know, a couple other people in their at their kitchen tables. And then eventually, when last horse passed, turned the horse barn into a manufacturing facility. I got my little 5-acre place rezoned so it's commercial, and we started assembling electronics in the horse barn.
By hand?
By hand.
So it went from the basement to the main level, mm-hmm, to out into the barn that was made into a manufacturing plant,
right,
place.
Right.
How many employees did you eventually end up with?
Well, it was crazy, you know. Things done by hand, things went slower, so you needed more people.
Sure.
I actually had 29 employees on the farm there at one time. They were in the barn, they were in the kitchen, they were in the laundry room, and they were all working away diligently.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Did they do your laundry for you too?
No. That didn't get done, but they But we grew past that, and we got out in the industrial park. And so then we started getting equipment so we could process more. And but now, again, it's up over 36 employees.
And now there's machines making most of these products?
Yeah. Super impressive machines. They're really something to watch those things run, where they'll the parts are on a reel, the tape is pulled back, a needle comes down, sucks the little part up, zips over and puts it where it's supposed to go on the circuit board, comes back and gets another one. And there's 8 heads going at the same time doing this. And the zip, 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 you know, so it's, they're just a flying.
Wow. So what kind of products would we see what you do or did? What would we see those in? Is there something if someone looked and be like, oh, yep, that's from OSCON, that, you know, we had a part in that?
No, we have no proprietary products of our own, so you wouldn't see the OSCON label on anything. But the customers we serve are original equipment manufacturers. So their equipment needs some electronics in it, and so they go to people like us to have the circuitry made, and then they put them in. But sometimes we do complete box build, too, where we would do the whole thing for them, box it, and ship it out to their distributors.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure. And now, you told me at one point you were making a laser or lasers for something, correct?
Right. Yeah, there was a guy that was making a green laser for handguns out of his garage, and it started going well, and so we started helping him. And don't you suppose he ends up having a huge facility over in northwest of Minneapolis, and they're making green lasers for handguns as well as rifles. So that was kind of something to be proud of. We helped this guy tremendously.
Sure. Well, now, why was he making green? Because aren't most lasers red?
Yeah, the reason is the green light can be seen in daylight much better than a red light.
Oh, okay, I got it. Yeah. I'm not much of a hunter, so I guess I don't know much about that. And I don't even know that I've seen a green laser on a gun before or any sort of sighting. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not big into, I don't know much about guns and all that kind of stuff. But I know that's another thing that you're kind of into, which is, I don't know if you're into hunting or not, but I know you're big into bow or archery.
Right.
And do they make those for archery at all or any bows? Do they make green lasers at all, or is it the sights? Because I know I have mine, and it's got the sight in there they got to look through, but do they make lasers for those too at all?
Not that I know of. Some people may have tried putting them on there.
Sure.
But usually the optics are better than the green light. There is a special sight, however, where you don't need a peep. Normally, you've got a little peephole, mm-hmm. you know, you aim through, and then here's another. So you've got 3 points of reference, the peep, the sight, and then whatever you're aiming at. So you can make a straight line.
Sure.
But there is a sight that's just got a dot here, and over there, you don't need a peep. I don't know how that works, but it's kind of unique.
So you don't have that on your stuff?
No.
Because that's the next thing I want to get into is that you're big into archery, as I was talking about. And so I've shot with you before. I've never beat you before. However, I did beat Stephanie. I did beat her on, I think, the second time we ever shot, and she couldn't believe what was going on because I purchased a bow from Shields, and I said, well, I'm just going to get a used one because I don't like renting stuff. I don't like borrowing people's stuff. Because one time when I was first learning how to shoot a bow, which is before I ever met Stephanie and met you, it was probably about 6 years before that, I was shooting and I was missing things from like 10 yards away, and these people said, how the hell do you miss from 10 yards away? You could pretty much just pull back and release and you'd be fine. And I'm like, well, I don't know, I mean, I'm shooting like this, and they go, close your eye, and I go like this, and they go, you're looking through your left eye, not your right eye. And I go, well, so what does that matter? They go, are you left-handed? And I said, I don't know, I mean, maybe. And then some guy goes, well, I'm left-handed, try this bow. Sure enough, pull back 10 feet, hit the target perfectly. Not a problem. By the end of the weekend, I was hitting things at 50, 60 yards away that were the 3D targets. But anyways, I do a lot of things left-handed, actually, not just bow shooting. I do the pool. I shoot pool left-handed. I would play guitar if I was left-handed, or if I play the guitar, I'd be left-handed. I actually kick left-footed as well. So I'm left-handed in a few different things, but I then eventually bought a left-handed bow because I'm backwards, I guess. So do you hunt at all?
Just started a little bit. No, not much. Just starting.
Okay. So you like to go and do like 3D shoots like we've done in the past before?
Right. Right.
Okay. Do you go to competitions places to do things like that?
Yeah. It's fun. You can find a 3D shoot partner any weekend of the season, you know, spring through up to fall and, you know, within driving distance, partner every weekend. There's an archery club for just about every city.
Sure.
And they all have their 3D shoots, and they try to offset each other so they're not, so you know, they're not stealing the other person's thunder. But, yeah.
Have you ever won one, a 3D
no.
shoot? Never
no.
won one? Oh, dang.
These guys that are winning, they are steady as rocks. They are dedicated. They're shooting every day. Oh, let me tell you, my friend Steve, we had a bet one night. They put a lifesaver on the back end of a doe, you know, a foam deer.
A candy lifesaver?
Yes.
Okay, I'm thinking like the big round thing.
No,
for...
it was a pop top off the pop can. That's what it was.
Okay.
It was a pop top, the aluminum pop, and we stuck it on the back of it, and this was like at 30 yards. And I bet him $2 he couldn't hit that, you know. He shoots. We go down and look. They're the stupid thing. He's right through
no kidding.
Right through that thing.
Whoa.
Picked it right off the back.
I don't think I could even hit that at 10 yards away. Yeah. That'd be pretty tough.
This guy dedicates his life to archery. He just loves it.
Now, Stephanie was telling me that I shoot a Matthews bow, and she said my dad was in on Matthews back when it first came about, and for hunters or people that shoot bow, they'll know what Matthews is. But she said that you were like in on the ground floor of this. I don't know how much truth there is because she never really expanded on it, but
Yeah. Maybe
you can tell me more of it, because I do have the Matthews bow,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if that's the top dog or if it's the bottom or middle, or I don't know how bows are classified.
Yeah. No, you're on the right path. Matthews, Matt McPherson came down to Austin in 85 and started McPherson Archery. His last name is McPherson.
Okay.
Matt McPherson. And the reason was that he got into it was he developed a compound bow with 75% let off. And what that means is with a regular bow, you draw it and you're holding and shaking and waiting for a good shot. And with the compound bow with let off, you can pull it back and you're only holding half the weight. Well, with his, you're only holding a quarter of the weight. It was 75% let off. So that stirred quite a controversy in the industry. People didn't think that was legal. How can you do that? That's not fair. But after they started shooting them and using them, that was the way to go, and that's the way the industry went.
So everyone else kind of modified theirs to kind of similar to Matthews then.
Right.
Because I know how that feels, because if you're not used to it and you pull back, boy, your shoulder and your back muscles are pretty tight after a while, and then obviously you're not going to sit steady with your with your target. So I can get that. So Matthews at the top of the line then?
I'd say absolutely, without a doubt, because all the other manufacturers are paying him royalties for the patents he has for different applications, you know, on
sure.
the bow, from the cams to the riser to the, you know, well, he has so many patents and has developed things so much, and his inspiration, you know, comes from God. He, with McPherson Archery, his logo was off the Sistine Chapel, the two hands, God reaching down and touching
yep.
man, a new beginning. And before he got into the archery, his family toured the United States doing Christian music. So, his inspiration, I don't know where he gets it, but he's not a degreed engineer or anything, but he comes up with all these ways of making things better.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And so it went from McPherson, now it's just to Matthews.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did he come? Did he just say, hey, I'm going to use my first name now instead of my last name? Or how?
Well, the company then, the investors that he had in Austin, they didn't want to spend money on advertising. And Matt had seen his brother from Abra Auto Body spending more money in a month than he spent on a year. And his brother was having tremendous success. He's got, you know, auto body repair shops all over the country. So Matt was very upset, and they headed out, and that was it. So Matt had to stop. But then he got an opportunity. Sparta, the community of Sparta, Wisconsin, said they would help. So they helped him get started again, and he took off like a rocket and just went to the, you know, the head of the pack.
So he spent more in advertising, and then it kind of worked itself out then?
Yes. With the quality he puts into his product, the advertising, and then the Matthews program for schools all over the United States. There's kids, I have relatives in Mississippi that participate in that shooting program, for an archery program. They supply the bows, and the bows are very versatile. They will work for anyone as far as draw length and poundage. So he's basically built the market for himself, too. I mean, he's a genius when it comes to that stuff.
Wow. And then you've mentioned something that his brother had started up, Abra Body?
Abra Auto Body, yeah. Body shop.
Because we have one of those right here in town, and I've seen them all over the United States. Yeah. So those two guys are brothers, and they both have two wildly successful companies.
Yes.
Must run in the family then. And then you said that his family is touring all over the United States for Christian music.
Right.
So his inspiration came from that then for his archery company as well. Right. And then does he play music then at all? Or?
Oh, yeah. Matt is a wonderful musician. He played steel guitar for the family band, and he can do everything. But such a normal guy. You know, when we had the McPherson company, he didn't want any of the credit or be in the limelight. He didn't want his photo out there. He said, Larry, you go out and do the trade shows, and you do the marketing and stuff, and I'll be the silent, you know,
sure
guy. So that's what we did, and I was fortunate enough that I got a nice plaque from Governor Perpich that one year for the amount of export we did for the state of Minnesota.
So you were endorsing it and going out to trade shows? Like, you were working hand-in-hand with him to sell?
I would take a booth in my van and go to the Wisconsin Deer Classic, the Milwaukee Deer Classic, go out to Colorado, you know, and.
Was that when it was actually called Matthews then, or was it McPherson?
That was McPherson.
Okay,
yeah, McPherson was done in 90.
Okay.
Yep.
And so then I assume you shoot Matthews then, because I only know of two companies, Matthews and Hoyt. The only two I know. It's probably only because that's all I see at Shields, so I have no idea. But mine was a used one. It was a black one, very nice left-handed one that I bought, and I have no idea if it's the best or not, but I'm going to assume from what you're telling me, he makes the best stuff out there as well. So does Matthews make anything else other than bows? Is he into anything else? Like, I don't know. Sometimes these companies make different products out there.
Well, Matt is a musician himself. He's got his own recording studio in Nashville, and he also has a luthier in Sparta, Wisconsin.
What's a luthier?
They make guitars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, handmade guitars.
Oh, gotcha.
One at a time. And he has his luthier making guitars for him in Sparta, and they are like the best of the best.
Really?
Yeah. I'd found a couple on, you know, I thought I could maybe find a dinged up one someplace, and I looked on eBay, and I found a couple, and they were like $14,000 each. So
do you know what a new guitar goes for? Like, just
I don't. I know. No? I know, when the last time I talked to Matt, I said, you know, Matt, you know, I'm supposed to buy a new guitar from you. And he said, well, buy one of these, carbon fiber.
Okay.
Carbon fiber guitars they've gotten into. And he said, they're like $3,000 or $4,000. He said, you can buy one of them. And so this last summer, there's a guy by the name of Jason Gray, Christian singer. He tours the country, and he's kind of at the top right now. And he put on a concert in Leroy, and we participated with him. And he told a story. He'd gotten one of them from Matt McPherson. Well, you know, you can't let your guitar get cold or too hot.
Okay.
Because, you know, with all the tension on strings, it'll blow up.
Sure.
So he got caught in a blizzard in North Dakota, and his guitar was in the trunk. And he got in there and settled in the bed, and he said, oh, my guitar. And then he thought, Well, let's just see if it does what he said. And the next day he came and it was fine. It wasn't even out of tune.
Really? So yeah. So the singer actually had a carbon fiber one?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
So he makes carbon fiber guitars too.
Yeah, and those are affordable.
Yeah. Okay, so affordable is $3,000 or $4,000?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sounds good. So 14 is pretty steep price then. So do you keep in contact with him still?
I don't see him that much, but I would love to because he is such a wonderful human being. I mean, you could challenge him to a foot race. He'd take you on. Not that he's that fast, just that he wants to have fun.
Sure, absolutely. Well, that's really neat that you were on the ground floor of Matthew's Bows, which any hunter out there knows what that is, or anyone that shoots archery knows Matthew's Bows. That's crazy. And it was just started like right in the Midwest here.
Right.
I had no idea about that. And Stephanie always told me, you need to talk to him about that. He was in something about that. And I'm like, well, here we are. Best spot to do is on the podcast.
Yeah, you are.
Now you're into other things that more of a wild side with me on the motorcycle aspect of things. So I guess my first question is, since I'm going out to Sturgis this year with your son, Mark, who's also been on the podcast, have you been to Sturgis?
Yes. About six times.
Six times. Yeah. Holy smokes. So my uncle is roughly your same age as well. He's born in 1950. He's been out there, I would say, a handful of times or more as well. He was on the podcast back in the spring, talked about it as well. Is there one that stands out to you that was the best time we had? It was such a good time, and here's why?
The first time you go will be the one that, you know, puts the biggest impression in your mind, and you won't forget things from your first trip, from the incredible noise, you know, and not getting any sleep because it's so noisy.
Sure.
To there's so much to see. The Badlands, even if it's not during Sturgis, there's so much to see and do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're staying in Lead, and so that's just like 3 miles away from Deadwood, so we're not going to be in Sturgis. We're not going to be actually in Deadwood. We wanted to be in Deadwood because it's kind of a cool historic town. I know there's a lot of traveling there, but the more affordable option for all five of us guys going out was Lead, and we're staying at an Airbnb. So I hope it's just as cool being at that place, too. We are across the street from a brewery, I did see.
Oh.
So that'll be fine for me.
There you go.
For the nighttime. So we're not roughing it in a tent like some guys do. I know I hear that's one thing. I'm like, that doesn't sound fun to me.
Yeah, it's a different trip. If you're a camper, you know, that's what you do.
I hate camping.
Yeah, if you're not, don't do it.
Well, yeah, and then the plan is we're going to leave from Winona here. We're going to go to Sioux Falls. We're going to stay there for a night, and Mark got us some rooms there and back, which was very kind of him. And then the next day we're going to go just south of I-90 because I want to try to avoid the wind and have a pleasant trip. Going 60-ish sounds better than going 80 with the crosswinds that, if you're not from South Dakota or been through, it's very windy sideways. So we're hoping to do what you said, was go through the Badlands as we come into Lead as well. So that's the whole plan. And then obviously do some rides throughout there. Oh, yeah. Is there a spot that we should be hitting up that you were out there and said, that's one thing you gotta see that?
One of the most beautiful rides we took was across to the big tall.
Is it Devil's Tower?
Yeah.
Out in Wyoming?
Yeah. Toward evening, take a ride out there. That was so pretty. But then the Needles, you got to do the Needles, of course.
Old Needles Highway, the really narrow one?
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And then you got to see the buffalo down in Custer. But you got to pay attention, too, because, you know, I almost went off the road looking at my brother to see what happened to your cap. And he pointed that he was sitting on it. And I looked back, and there was, I don't know how many thousand feet straight down, and there was no guardrail. And I just kind of puckered up and moved back to the left.
Puckered up, got back on the road.
Yep.
That's good. Yeah, well, Steph and I took a trip there, not during Sturgis rally time, only took a trip out there March of 21 with the dogs. And we stayed at a hotel for $35 a night. And it was a comfort inn. Don't get me wrong. So it wasn't some pile of junk somewhere. But they allowed dogs in there. And so we had this whole plan. We're going to go We're going to hit up Devil's Tower in Wyoming, and then the next day we're going to go down to Colorado and stay there, and then we're going to make our way back to Minnesota eventually. And she said, well, we got family in Colorado. Maybe we can go see them. I'm like, that sounds like a fantastic plan. Well, once we got settled in there and the hotel was $35 a night, I was like, this isn't a bad idea. So I'm like, well, maybe we just stay here. And so then what we did is we went to Sturgis one day, and we went to Custer State Park, and we saw Crazy Horse, and we saw some of the things around there, went to some breweries per usual. Yeah. And I was like, I could live out here for a little while. Everyone was so friendly. I remember we were walking down Deadwood on their brick road, which is beautiful, and we're walking around with the dogs, and someone's like, hey, come on in, take a look at the shop. I'm like, well, we got dogs. And they go, that doesn't matter, bring them in. I'm like, oh, okay, sounds good. So everyone was so friendly out in South Dakota. I couldn't believe it. I loved it out there. And even Sioux Falls was nice when we were coming back. We stayed there. So it was a good time. So then you had what year was your first time out there? Do you remember?
Oh, that's a good question. It's too long ago. I can't remember.
Do you remember the bike you rode? Maybe that'll jostle up some memories.
I do. My brother was going to train police over in some place over by Ukraine.
Okay.
And so he said I should take care of his motorcycle that year. And that's what got me going into motorcycling again. And so my friend Arlen and I went out. I had Dick's Harley, and Arlen had his Honda. And we packed those things so full of stuff. Neither one of us knew what we were doing. But we just brought everything in the kitchen sink, you know, just in case. But it was so memorable, you know, the noise. And like you said, everybody's just there to have fun.
Sure.
You'll be hard pressed to find somebody that isn't sociable.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I look forward to is I don't know if I'll ever do it again. It might be a one and done thing, but I got Steph bought me a pack for my sissy bag or my sissy bar. So I got a bag there. I got my two bags on the side of the saddle bags. So, and then we got a guy that's going to actually take a car out with his trailer as well. So there's five of us going, four of us are riding bikes out there. One guy is following just in case maybe we have trouble. We can take his bike off, put the other one on there, and someone would have to ride that one. But it should be an interesting trip. But I said, I don't want to ride I-90 all the way there because if you go 80, 85 in this crosswinds, you'd be sitting sideways on your bike just trying to keep it upright.
That takes a lot out of you.
That doesn't sound like a fun trip to me. So hopefully in lead, we will enjoy our time there as well. And it's not that far away from everything else that's going on.
You will. And you got to check out the gold mine. And there's even a place where you can pan for gold. When the kids were little, we took them there. And I remember they sent us home with a little vial with a gold speck in it. You know, we met, and you each got a gold speck.
One gold speck.
I don't remember what it cost, but we got, what became of them.
There's probably just as many gold specks in a Goldschlager bottle as you got that day. Well, yeah, I look forward to that. And Mark's never been there. Your son Mark, he's never been there. So he goes, this would be a great time to do it. And I go, perfect. And, well, my daughter will be, 3 months at that point? So yeah. Got to be a little careful when I'm out there that time. So, what are you riding these days? Because that was since, obviously, a while ago. Yeah. You took what kind of bikes you got now?
Well, I've still got a Harley. I've got a V-Rod that's it's pretty cool. But I've also got this Honda, 2018 white Honda Goldwing, and it is the best bike I've ever ridden. You can corner with that thing like you're on a sport bike. Acceleration, 125 horse, you know, and 125 foot-pounds of torque. And the automatic transmission on that thing, I always thought I was going to be embarrassed. I would hate it. I love it. It's just like having electronic shifter. It's just the shift so quick, it holds back going down the hills. It couldn't be better.
Well, and I know I've ridden with you, and you get going pretty fast. And I remember we were riding around the Lanesboro Fountain area here in Minnesota, and you were gone. We couldn't even see you. You got around so many corners, and by the time we actually caught up to you at a stop sign, you were off your bike looking in your trunk for something. And Mark and I come up behind you, and I'm like, holy shit, he went pretty fast.
Well, I think I was trying to keep up the guy ahead of me. I just, you know, I don't think
I don't remember any guy ahead of us, but maybe there was one. If so, it wasn't us because Mark and I were so far behind. We were probably about a minute behind, and we got there, and you're off your bike, and I was like, holy cow, how fast was he going? But you cornered that thing pretty well. You're right.
That thing leans. Yeah, that thing hates.
So the Honda Goldwing is like a sport bike.
Yep.
Wow.
It's just like a sport touring. I mean, it just, yeah.
And then you have, what, another V-Rod or two
V-Rod? Well, I got a V-Rod, and I'm trying to decide if I should fix it up and make it a custom deal like they do in Europe with custom body parts, you know, and everything, or just trade it for like a Ducati or something, you know, sweet.
Oh.
Or a rocket, you know, Triumph rocket. I don't know.
Yeah, a guy your age needs a crotch rocket.
Exactly.
Why would you not?
Maybe the bodysuit to go with it, you know?
That might be smart. That might be smart in case. So now I know you're not just, that's another part of you, but since you've kind of backed off and you're starting to, you got into retirement area, you are now into music. And I think from what I understand, you've kind of taught yourself how to play the guitar. At least since I've known you, that's what I remember. I think you taught yourself kind of how to play guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And so have you always had a love for music then?
Yeah, I would say, you know, since college and everything. And, well, actually, no, before that, too. I loved to dance. We'd go to high school dances and the neighboring communities and stuff. So, yeah, I've loved music my whole life.
Sure. What kind of dancing? Swing dance?
Well, it'd be called West Coast Swing, I guess is what you'd call what we used to do.
Okay.
And then there was a twist, but that kind of came and went, you know.
Twist and shout. Also, so then so you've always been into music, but you were into dance first, and then you got into playing music. So how did that all come about then,
When I was in college, the pastor's daughter where I lived, she was a musician, and John Denver was the thing. He was all it for me. And so she taught me how to play a few chords. So I got to play a few songs. And when I worked in Winona, I would take my break and go next door with a pad and pencil and copy down the words and the notes, you know, for the John Denver songs, because college students don't have any money. And that's where I got interested in the guitar.
And so pen and paper.
Right.
Not an iPad tablet.
Right.
All right. So then you went in there and you started kind of writing down music and things that you like, and then now I've known you for 11 years, and I remember you starting to get into playing with other people and bands. So did you teach yourself from YouTube, or how did that all come about now that, because you've been playing, as far as if I had to guess, you've been playing 7 or 8 years since I've known you.
Well, YouTube, and then I found out about something called Rock Camp for Dads.
Rock Camp for Dads.
Rock Camp for Dads. Okay. It's a little organization up in the cities. And you pay to go 4 Saturdays for 3 hours, and they'll put together a little group of 6 musicians or so. So you've got a complete band. And at the end of your month of practicing and playing, you get to play downtown a few songs at a major venue.
In Minneapolis area?
In Minneapolis, yeah.
Well, so that was intimidating.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
So you said 4 Saturdays for 3 hours apiece.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you can play in a band in front of people.
These are people that can play a little bit, but they've never played with anybody else.
Okay.
Or they may have, but anyway, another benefit from that is I did that several times, and a lot of the groups, they form a little bond, and some of them go on to be a private band, and we did that once too. We called ourselves Highway 7, and we weren't too bad. There was the lead singer. She was cute as could be, and she had won a karaoke contest. She was the top singer out of 6,000 contestants.
Holy cow, she must be good.
Oh, she was good.
Yeah.
But as fate would have it, her and the bass player decided they wanted to do something else, so they took off, and that was the end of the band, and that was tragic. It was almost like a divorce for me.
So Highway 7 came out of this Rock Camp for Dads.
Right.
How long did you guys last then? Before
6 months.
Okay, so it was only 6 months. Why, all these bands, they eventually, it seems like a player leaves, a drummer leaves, or the bass player, or the guitarist, and you never know that they got replaced. It's always the main singer. You're like, oh, well, we know that that's not the real singer. That's not Steve Perry from Journey. It's someone else, but you never realize the background people.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of times, actually, I think when bands come to towns, They'll actually ask a local artist to come and play in the band in the background, and it must be, I don't know, cost efficient or just easier to...
Right. There's a guy from Austin, his name is Denny Chernicki. He had six bands going at one time. He played all around the Midwest, and he had the fill-ins wherever he went.
Sure.
I mean, he was just that good that he just needed to get a group to support him, and then he went. He's made a living out of that.
Okay, so now the band broke up. How many years ago do you think that was?
I'm not sure.
It's been a while.
Five, six. Yeah.
Okay, so now do you play alone, or are you with someone, or a band again?
I've got a little group called Robert, and I are my friends and I, and I called it my friends and I, so we don't name names. So if needs to be some substitution. There can be, like, if Robert isn't available, I have another friend, John, who can step in, you know, in his place. And something, if I'm not available, I'm sick or whatever, the show goes on.
Sure, and it's still just my friends and I. It's not Larry and my buddy, whatever it might be, in case you can't be there. Well, I guess that's smart then on your marketing portion. If you have business cards, you don't ever have to change them up if the band breaks up, because... It really can't break up because it's just my friends and I.
The show must go on.
Show must go on. So how long have you had that going for then?
Is it 3 years? Probably working on... it's 2 years for sure.
Well, was it after COVID or before COVID? That's the easiest way.
After.
So it's at least 4 years or less.
Yeah.
That's the way I think of it.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So you have a... Now, are you singing... What kind of music are you singing then? Because you said... Just a little while ago, you said, John Denver was all the rage, and James Taylor, I think you brought up at one point, and you said some of those names. Is that the kind of music you're playing, or is it? Have you learned just a ton of other things, too?
Well, I've played with some other bands, too.
Okay.
Door 49 out of Austin there. Some bands are country only. Some are rock only, and some are, you know. But I'd like to be diversified. So if you have an audience of younger people, you can play more current stuff.
Sure.
If you have older people, you can play classic rock or classic country. So it kind of depends on the audience, you know, that you're playing to. So I'm trying to get balance. So you've got, you know, as many genres as you can, you know, a little reggae, a little R&B, some bluegrass, some blues.
Okay.
You know, so you can appease everyone.
Yeah, and I know you've learned how to play some Engelbert Humperdinck, because I've had to step in as the friend, you've learned how to play some Engelbert for me, some John Mayer. That was a fun time too. I like singing John Mayer, but it is I noticed it's pretty tough, because I'm not a singer. I like to sing karaoke. I love singing karaoke, but I'm not. Like, you play the guitar, and it's a different tempo or a different beat than what I would hear from the song. So I understand that. I was trying to listen to my cues for when I'm supposed to come in, and I'm also reading kind of how you're playing the music a little bit. But it is, even though I've only been in front of maybe a very small crowd, it's an adrenaline rush. I kind of get, and I wish I had a better voice, because I would love to go out and sing. It's just something I like to do, but it's fun to get in front of people and do that. And so my next question for you is there a memorable time that you remember playing in front of, whether it was in front of a certain crowd or at a certain event? Is there something that sticks out in your mind at all?
It's so dependent on the audience. If you get people that are there to have a good time no matter what, you know, they're laughing with their friends, they're having fun, they want to get up and dance, and they want to encourage you to play this or that or whatnot. This summer down in Lanesboro, there was a bunch of tourists there that were just out to have a good time, and we did have a good time, you know. Sometimes somebody might even want to come up and sing a little bit.
I've been there.
Yeah. Or I might have to go out and dance a little bit with someone. Who knows, you know?
Sure.
But we do what we can to have fun.
See, now some of my favorite places that you play at are always at a brewery, is probably number one. And I know you play in many different venues. Is there a certain venue that makes it a little bit more fun, or is there something that maybe even makes it awkward? Is there a venue that's awkward for you at all?
I tell you, we had an awkward moment this fall. We were at a venue. I shouldn't say the place, so I won't.
Okay.
But they're known for having a good dance crowd there. And we played like a song or two, And everybody, except maybe a handful of people, got up and left.
Oh, shit.
What in the world? Well, there's a street dance and a whole bunch of other stuff going on outside at the same time.
Oh, no, that's not fun.
No. So that was a little awkward. I felt sorry for the owners there, you know, here. They'd hired us to play. And so it turned into like a practice.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Well, you know, one of them I remember, we were in Lanesboro, and it was at the VFW or American Legion there. I remember it was a very small venue. Mm-hmm. Is it weird to play when it's really like tight corners and stuff like that? Because in my mind, the best place to play is if there's big stage, big lights. But I remember this one. It was you and I think it was Robert. And you guys are like in this little tiny corner, and there's a bar and about five tables. And I'm like, this is really crammed in here. Yeah. I mean, is that weird for you to do that? Because like you're literally a table away from someone playing a guitar in front of their face, basically.
I know. Yeah, it you can't beat a good stage and good lighting and good sound, you know, and in a big crowd. That's like you say, it's the adrenaline rush.
Yep. I can only imagine, because obviously you've seen me wrestle before, and it's way better when you're in front of a crowd that's big and they're hyped up and ready to go. Some people might think it's the opposite. They might go, oh, well, it's a little intimidating being in front of people. And I go, no, it's actually worse being in front of a small crowd,
right?
Because not only is it awkward, but for two, they can actually see every single like mistake you would possibly make. And I'm like, no, it's way better being in front of a huge crowd than it is. It's actually less nerve-wracking for me. So I don't know if it's like that for you.
Yeah. No, you're spot on there. Yeah, it's if people are having fun, you're right in there with them having fun, and it's, you know, you should almost feel like you should pay to be there yourself rather than being paid.
Yeah, I know that's the best thing, is then it's not even work anymore.
Yep.
So what kind of places do you play at then? Are you playing at you said brewery, obviously, because I've seen you there. Do you play at like fairs, festivals, anything like that?
That's where we want to be, is some of the bigger ones. Like if you could get into car shows or fairs or things of that nature, that's big time. But there's also bar and grill. There's the service organizations, you know, Eagles, BFWs, and breweries, wineries. But yeah, there are so many places. And then if you want to go beyond that, you've got your nursing homes and senior citizen living and all that.
Oh, wow.
As well as church. And there's something called Cowboy Church. It's a national organization, and it's non-denominational. Musicians will gather and just play for people. And you go downstairs, and you've got the church basement ladies, and you've got the best desserts and coffee in the world. You can't beat it. There's two of them in the area, one in Cherry Grove and one in Leroy, Minnesota.
So Cowboy Church, what are you I'm kind of confused. Is it country music then, or
anything that has to do with Christ, you know? It can be cowboy, it can be bluegrass, but just so it's a little reverent, you know, it's all that's required.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Does,
yeah.
So then when you go to a cowboy church, are you just meeting up with a whole bunch of people then? And it's just whoever shows up and you just kind of jam
pretty out? Much whoever shows up and you take turns, you know, playing. It goes around the horn. You might get to play four songs one night. You might get to play, you know, more. But
sure.
Yeah.
So is there one that's easier to get into then, venue-wise? Is there one you find that I get hired at this? Because you broke them down into a whole bunch of different ones.
Oh, I see.
Is there one that's really easy for you to get into? Like, if I call them up, I know I'm getting into it. It's pretty simple. Because I've seen you at Bar and Grills. You talked about that. Mm-hmm. I've seen you at VFWs. You played for Stephanie and I's our wedding shower, and I got up on stage too, and I got to sing. And I remember looking across the parking lot, because it was the summer, and there's the Mexican food truck, and people were waving and yelling at me, and I'm like, if I only had a voice, boy, I'd sound really good over there for you. But maybe that's at 10 or 12, I don't know, meters away from us is what they were. So is there one that you find that's really simple to get into then?
Well,
or they like you more maybe because of your style?
As far as calling, you know, people think that they call you. No, you've got to call them and ask for a booking. And the professional places like Diamond Joe's or Four Daughters, they'll have the whole year booked by February, you know? So If you're not on the ball, you're not going to get in there. But the rest of them, the smaller venues, they'll book a couple months out.
Okay.
And so what you do is you just keep calling. And then, of course, the events, special events, that's planned way in advance, too, who gets to play there. And it's usually the ones that play get asked to come back next year, so it's a little tough to get in there.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's you got to be on your toes and calling and working to get in there at these places. They don't come to you.
Yeah, I know I've sent you some. I'll go to a place and I'll see a stage. It's usually at a brewery because that's where I'm mainly at when I go places. I know I'll send you one. I go, hey, you should contact this place and see if you get in there. And there's a couple that you've actually contacted and you've been there. And then we've come and watch you because it's just it's a lot more enjoyable when you like the place too. And then also, you know, the singer, it's a lot more fun.
Yeah.
Is there a place that you went that just felt really big time for yourself? Like, oh, like this is, because I was talking about that just a moment ago where you're not crammed in a corner, but you're like, yep, I feel like this is it. This is the big time. I got everything going. The lights are there. The look is all here. Is there one that stands out in your mind that you've done?
Well, not so much one. There's one that would have been, and that was up in the cities there, Toby Keith's place. And that the dance floor was as big as a gymnasium, you know? And we were set to play there with Highway 7, and we went and scouted it out ahead of time, you know? But then the week before we were scheduled to play, the place closed down because the liquor license taxes weren't paid.
Of course.
So that was very disappointing. Yep.
So that was the one that
would have been.
That would have been.
Would have, could have.
So is there one that has been then?
Has been.
That you're like, ooh, this is a nice place. I like this one.
Let's see. Has been.
Because I can only imagine that if there was a nice stage and some lights and a bunch of people dancing, it's got to feel like a not when they get up and leave and go out to a dance.
You know what? In Fountain, behind the bar there, they built...
That's the one that we, I think we stopped at when we took a motorcycle ride this past fall. Right.
They built a huge structure behind there, and it looks just like what you'll see when you go to Sturgis.
Okay.
And they've got some big name bands in there, you know, where I think they said they can accommodate up to 3,000 people back there.
Wow.
There weren't that many people there when I played up there, but... when they get the big names there are. But then Torgy's in Austin, too. You know.
Oh, yeah, they got the stage there.
The high-dollar bands come in on Saturday, and then they have the locals playing on Fridays.
Okay.
And I played there a couple times, and that's pretty fun.
Yeah. Now, I noticed you got your guitar here, and I want you to... What are you playing, I guess, first? What's your brand?
This is a Gibson.
So it's not a Matthews.
No. No, it's not a Matthews.
You did not get the Matthews. Well, let's see what we got here then.
Okay.
Now, I can hold it for you and you can explain because that'll be probably easier than you trying to.
Okay.
All right. Well, so it looks beautiful, first of all.
That's a Starburst, what they call a Starburst paint job or configure on there.
Is the Starburst you're talking about, the tan portion?
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
And let's see. That's called a Hummingbird. That's kind of the top of the line on their acoustic.
Okay.
And
can it, you say acoustic, but I think you also hook it up to an amp, don't you?
Right. There's electronics in there too. So if you want to hook it up to an amp, you can.
How do you normally play it then? Are you normally hooking up to an amp, or do you normally play it just freestyle acoustic, nothing behind you?
I enjoy hooking it up to an amp because then you can add reverb and delay and all kinds of things and make it sound like so special.
So the Hummingbird is the model.
Right.
And that's probably why they got the Hummingbirds on there then.
Yeah, and Gibson is the manufacturer.
Okay, so do you put Gibson up there at the top of the line then? Because I know there's Fender out there, and I guess I don't know much about guitars. I didn't even know Matthews made a guitar, so.
I've got a Taylor, which is right up there with them now, too. They've really come around in the last few years. I've got a Larrabee that comes out of Canada. And I started out with a little Yamaha, a little black Yamaha.
Sure.
Let's see. There's been some. I've got another Gibson at home, too. This is my best one.
How do you decide which one to play, then? Do you take multiple with you?
No. Sometimes when you, like, say you see people with different guitars sitting there, and they'll go pick up another one.
Yep.
They've got it tuned down a step or a half step so that for certain songs.
Well, that's a beautiful guitar. I'm going to hand it back to you so I don't break anything.
Okay. Thank you.
Because I'm also going to ask you here in a moment if you wouldn't mind playing some songs for us. You'll be the first person on the podcast to play any music.
Oh, that's an honor.
And I guess what I where I want to go with this is I want you to play your favorite songs that you enjoy, mm-hmm. or the ones that maybe you're best at, or maybe there's a meaning behind why you like it. So would you mind playing the Gibson for us then?
Let me try.
All right, so Larry's going to play a few of his favorite or best songs, and maybe if you even want to give a description as to why you're playing the song,
okay,
that would be even better.
All right. Well, here's a song by Simon Garfunkel called The Boxer, and this is from my era, in 1970, actually.
Perfect.
I am just a poor boy, though my story's seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies in jest till a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my home and family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, the quiet of a railway station running scared. Laying low, seeking out the poorer quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. La la la. La 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 la. Okay, that's an example of a folk song from my.
Okay, so there you go. That's a folk song, and that's from your era.
Yep. And here's another similar folk song, and this is by Donovan. For those of you who might remember. In the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty, I want to be in the warm hold of your loving mind. To feel you all around me and to take your hand along the sand. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind. When sundown pales the sky, I wanna hide a while behind your smile. And everywhere I'd look, your eyes I'd find. For me to love you now would be the sweetest thing, would make me sing. Ah, but I may as well try and catch the wind.
Now, I don't think I've ever heard that song before, so that's
okay.
Good.
And then I think this is one that you like.
Which one we got?
This would be Wagon Wheel.
Everyone knows Wagon Wheel, yep, by Darius Rucker.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, this is a good one. Everyone knows this one when you play it.
Okay, this is a little peppier. Heading down south to the land of the pines, I'm thumbing my way into North Carolina. Staring up the road, pray to God I see a headlight. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers, and I'm hoping for Raleigh and see my baby tonight. So rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me, mama, any way you feel. Hey, 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 mama, rock me. Oh, rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, hey, mama, rock me.
Nicely done. I got to give a round of applause for that.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
Well, that was awesome. You're the first person to sing on the podcast now.
Nice.
So as we're starting to wind down here, I'm going to go off topic, and I got to ask you one more final question. As Stephanie and I are about to be parents come in May, what is a quality or maybe qualities that Stephanie has that's going to make her a fantastic mother?
Stephanie has always had this sense of justice. You know, people might laugh, but all those Disney movies she watched, they stress the difference in right and wrong. Bullying, you know, is wrong. And Steph has always stood up for the underling. And she has such a sense of right and wrong and loyalty and being truthful and honest. And I mean, she's just a good person. And I don't know how this baby could go wrong. I really don't.
I don't think so either. Not with her as the mom.
And you as well.
Oh, thank you.
With all your good characteristics, man.
Well, appreciate it very much.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Larry, this has been fantastic. We've talked about a plethora of things, your background from you even being here in this town at college, all the way to the businesses that you've started up or actually had a part in starting up, to your crazy adventures in Sturgis, and also your new love of music, which you bring that guitar literally almost everywhere you go to, just in case, because you've actually played right here for Christmas a couple of years ago, and you had all the little grandchildren actually singing. They didn't know who you were, and you had everyone singing Christmas music, and the kids absolutely loved that. So now I want you to plug yourself and let everyone know if they want to get a hold of you, because that would be awesome if they would start calling you.
All right.
So plug yourself. Where can people find you in order to hire you to come play some music at their place?
Okay. Well, my name's Larry Erickson, and the band is called My Friends and I. We're out of Austin, Minnesota. You can find us on Facebook, or look at my middle name is Alvin, and I go by Alvin Erickson on Facebook as well. So My Friends and I, or Alvin Erickson on Facebook, 507-438-2068.
And for those who are listening and you didn't catch that, I'll put the information down in the show notes. You can find My Friends and I, or you can find Alvin Erickson on Facebook, and you can contact him that way to have him come play your place, because I've been to many of them, and it's always a fun time. And you may even see me on stage if I'm there, so you never know.
Absolutely.
But this has been another edition of Brews and Cruise. Remember to like, share, follow, subscribe, leave a comment, whatever. And also, if you want to watch us, you can watch us on YouTube. Check out Larry playing the guitar, singing some music live in front of you. Or if you just want to hear the audio, check out Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Amazon Music, any major streaming platform. You will see Brews and Cruise out there. Again, this has been another episode of Brews and Cruise. I want to thank Larry by giving him one big cheers. Cheers.